truly felt like dying and going to heaven. Lillian knew this because, although she had been only 7 months old at the time, her parents had, over the years, often told her how they had felt, and there had been tears in their eyes as they remembered. Maisie and Alfred had died just about 4 years ago now, within months of each other. They had been a devoted couple, proud to see their only daughter become a journalist. Moving to Sunlight 349 had brought them such incredible happiness. Every morning they would stand on their tiny balcony and look out over the calm, ordered, pastel-shaded symmetry of the vast city in which they lived and give thanks for the Dalek Foundation and the Sunlight Worlds. The Dalek Foundation had given them another chance, another life, and although the ill effects of the squalid conditions their bodies had previously been forced to endure had ultimately meant that their lifespans were relatively short, they had both died contentedly in their early 60s. So Lillian felt guilty when she found the pastel shades dull, cross with herself when she longed for the temperature to vary by a few degrees now and again. Sometimes she almost prayed for rain. She had never experienced it. She had seen it on screens, read about it in books. She had even stood in her shower, dialed down from hot to cold, closed her eyes, and tried to imagine what it might be like if this were the weather outside all day. The skimmer bus, touching down gently, jolted Lillian out of her daydream. The railroad official sitting opposite gave her a strange look. Lillian could not resist a smirk to herself. She realized she had been sitting with her face up, eyes closed and twitching at the imaginary impacts of those longed-for raindrops. "Something the matter?" asked the official. "No," she said, still smirking a bit. Then she felt guilty again. She glanced around at the grim faces of other officials on the bus and remembered there was a serious business in hand. She tried to suppress the fact that because it was serious, and perhaps even a little dangerous, she wanted to jump for joy. Everything was so smooth running and happy on Sunlight 349, and that made a journalist's job pretty uninteresting. At last, there was the potential for bad news. As she stepped out of the bus, she was only dimly aware of the door whirring shut and the soft hiss of the vehicle lifting off and flying away behind her. The concerned mutters of the crowd were also fading for Lillian. She was transfixed by the disaster sight before her. Two trains had collided at speed. The impact had torn into both vehicles, ripping them apart in the front sections, then scattering the rear carriages into each other, hammering, crushing, tearing them out of shape. Only the very last compartment of the left-hand train still retained any semblance of its original outline. The rest was just wreckage, a horrible snapshot of metal, plastic and fibres twisted, bent and pulverized by unrelenting kinetic force. People had died in this crash. Lillian knew there was no doubt about that. Then she realized, with some shame, that a number of the supposed officials she had traveled with were in fact relatives of the survivors or victims. And she had allowed herself a warm grin of satisfaction at the exciting professional prospects such a disaster offered her. For a moment, her own selfishness made her feel sick, but the exhilaration was still there, and she pressed on, seeking out security guards to get permission to inspect the wreckage. She already had her tiny palm hollow camera running. She panned across the entangled trains and pulled back for a wide shot of those looking on, many of them featureless with shock, some starting to cry, gulping in painful air in great heaving sobs. The sound of their grief flooded into her ear implants, perfect stereo human suffering. She zoomed in on one old lady, for an instant thinking it was her mother. It could so easily have been a few years back. It made her feel lucky and guilty yet again. That old guilt about not feeling grateful enough for the Sunlight Worlds. A security guard touched her on her elbow. It made her jump a little. "This way," he nodded, and led her down the slope to the track. As she followed him, she saw emergency crews arriving and going about the morbid business of removing bodies. There was the smell of fire, scorched metal, and worse. Electronic cutting gear was starting up, slicing into metal so that any survivors could be rescued. She heard cries of pain, of a